Hello, my name is Caroline Baum and welcome back to the Booktopia Buzz for 2016. Have you been enjoying your summer reading? The often dismal weather has certainly helped in many parts of the country while being very favourable to farmers. And by the way, if you're hearing a lot of noise in the background, there is a flock of cockatoos going over just now. The way we read on holiday is so different from the 20 minutes grabbed before you fall asleep on the page last thing at night for the rest of the year. Our household made one New Year's resolution about reading in 2016, one night a week when we're at home and would probably slump on the sofa and binge on TV drama. We won't. We'll read instead. We might even make it two nights a week. And I have to say, nearly 3 weeks in, so far, so good. During the year, I read for you with a sense of purpose and responsibility to handpick things I think you would like. For the past 6 weeks, though, I've read utterly selfishly, and I have to say it's been heaven. So here is what I read. I kicked off the summer with the third and fourth of the Neapolitan novels by Elena Ferrante. I had some catching up to do on the rest of the world. It took me until book three in the quartet to become gripped by the relationship at the centre of these novels, but once I surrendered, that was it. I think I forgot to breathe while reading part four, The Story of the Lost Child. It was so tough and gritty, so fierce and ruthless in its brutal psychological honesty about the dynamics between two flawed women of great strength whose fates are intertwined by forces that are almost mythic. By the time we reach the final volume, Lila and Elena are both mothers. Elena has a career as a well-known author, but her love life is chaotic, messy, and destabilizing. Meanwhile, Lila, actually let's call her Lila, seems increasingly unwell, though the raging life force that makes her so charismatic in her community remains undimmed. They argue about politics, family, community, friendship, with an almost savage intensity. Raw power tears across every page. Tragedy, menace, revenge, and grief haunt the final chapters of this epic literary achievement. It richly repays the time invested, building to a crescendo from which the reader, when released, may feel a little bereft. In my case, I sort of wandered around the house for a couple of days feeling rather lost. But Kate Atkinson came to my rescue with God in Ruins. I was a huge fan of Kate Atkinson's Life After Life, which explored the different possibilities of how life might turn out for its heroine Ursula, born into an Edwardian family and culminating in the late 1960s. Then my Booktopia colleague John Purcell raved about the sequel, which focuses on the life of Teddy, Ursula's bomber pilot brother, who was so liked by both author and readers that he earned a book to himself. Teddy is a good man, kind and thoughtful, but circumspect. He's a triumph of Atkinson's imagination, and his sensibility is gloriously nuanced in its private, understated British diffidence and understatement. Even when he's in the middle of a mission, these are the novel's high point, their airborne perspective neatly mirroring Ursula's climactic London blitz scenes in the earlier novel, he keeps his cool and thinks of his crew more than himself. Atkinson's ability to describe the experience of being an airman in Bomber Command is nothing short of dazzling. She brings a nobility to it that I found very moving. This makes the novel a marvellous tribute to the quiet courage of men whose names we've forgotten, who went out over and over against the odds, following orders. But Teddy's inner life is tremendously rich, painted with plausibility and delicacy as both husband and father. He's a hard, hard character to forget. It was so good to see this win the UK's Costa Prize for Fiction, as it deserves. Then I went on to the doorstop of 2015. This book had been daunting me and I kept putting it off. It's A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. And it may be called A Little Life, but it's a very big book indeed, over 600 pages to be exact. Now, I won't pretend this couldn't do with a prune here and there, but overall it's immensely satisfying. The arc of the narrative is the life of four male friends, all of them polished and successful New York achievers. But one figure is the hub of the story. Jude has had a terrible, troubled, abused childhood which haunts every aspect of his adult existence. His solution to ridding himself of his dreadful memories is ghastly. the passages describing his self-harm make for hard and disturbing reading. Supported by his adoptive parents and by his lover, can he find a way to shed the nightmares? That question kept me emotionally engaged thanks to the tenderness with which the author captures the intense relationships in this masculine world. This is in sharp contrast to the harshness with which Ferrante dissects female friendship in her Neapolitan quartet, so it's very interesting to read them close by and compare notions of friendship and the way writers of different genders address them. For something a little bit lighter, I went to American fiction again, this time Amy Stewart's Girl Waits with Gun. Now, this really was a lot of fun. It's based on the true story of one of the US's forgotten first female sheriffs, and it's one hell of a ride, a sort of romp mystery that defies easy categorization. At its heart is the marvellously named Constance Copp, C-O-P-P, who decides to take matters into her own hands when a gangster overturns her and her sisters in their buggy. Stewart has a playful way with her prose and storytelling while never trivialising the social issues that underpin her pacey plot. Copp is a marvellously rendered early feminist who shoots straight, both literally and figuratively. Now, when it came to British fiction, I read a book that was so covered in plaudits that it really stood out last year. This is a book, again, a very difficult book to categorise, called Grief is the Thing with Feathers by Max Porter. Anyone who has lost a loved one, be it a child, partner, friend or parent, will find more consolation in these pages without having to endure well-meant cliché advice about moving on than in any self-help book. A man has lost his wife and is left bereaved with two young sons to look after. The man is a Ted Hughes scholar, writing an analysis of the laureate's poetry. His grieving but richly literate and playful imagination conjures up a crow, one of Hughes's most powerfully emblematic presences, and this crow becomes the family's guardian as it stumbles along in sorrow. Now, it sounds grim, but it's anything but. There's humour here and fairy tale-like fantasy, making this one of the most charming, original, uplifting books about loss and its aftermath I've ever come across. And as a debut, it is nothing short of sensational. In fact, it's so good that I would say, don't wait to read this until you're in a situation of grief. Give yourself the pleasure and the joy of reading it now for the sheer majesty and power of the prose. Even if you haven't lost someone, maybe what it'll do is give you more empathy and compassion and understanding for people who have. I read a memoir over summer that I really enjoyed too, called The Blue Touch Paper by David Hare. David Hare is one of Britain's most successful playwrights. Think of plays like Stuff Happens, Via Dolorosa and The Blue Room. In recent years, he's made his reputation with verbatim theatre based on transcripts from legal proceedings and political fiascos ranging from the privatisation of British Rail to the war in Iraq. Many of his best works have been staged in Australia, but even if you don't know his work, this unpretentious memoir offers both backstage and front row insight into the beginnings of a creative life, the serendipitous highs and lows of collaboration, and how Hare was able to capture the zeitgeist of Britain at its most tumultuous time of change and political upheaval. Mrs. Thatcher was, in a sense, the making of him, together with his frustration with the left, of which he was an artistic leading light. His indignation over institutional hypocrisy was also fuel for his tremendous, relevant output. He's given women, including Kate Blanchett, some of the juiciest parts of the 20th century, but audiences have not always greeted these complex characters warmly. And from the February releases by my bedside, just catching up on what's out there this upcoming month, I picked out Under the Influence by the American writer Joyce Maynard, who's been a New York Times bestseller writer for quite a while. Under the Influence is a moral tale with plenty of twists, and I really like the sound of it, and the first 35 pages are really promising. Drink costs Helen both her marriage and custody of her young son. Then she meets Ava and Swift Haviland, wealthy philanthropists, and Elliot, a quiet accountant who's very kind but unimpressed by Helen's glamorous new friends. The Havilands offer Helen help in regaining custody of her son, but first she must repay the debt she owes them. Well, you can see how that premise would hook a reader very easily. Anyway, that's where I'm up to so far. Enjoy the reading ahead of you this month and the journey ahead of us as readers for the rest of 2016. See you soon.